Hey there, do you dream of escaping into a book? Maybe your escape includes a cozy cabin in the mountains or a magical town along the coast. Either way, you're in the right place. Welcome to Literary Escapes with me, Becky. This year on the podcast, we're exploring the United States. So every week I'm going to bring you a new book set in a different state. So let's see where we're going today.
So welcome back to the Literary Escape podcast. Today we are in our 16th week of the year and visiting the state of New York with author Maria DiRico, also known as Ellen Byron. So welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you here today. So you are a New Yorker, is that correct?
Yes, born and raised, although I've lived in California since 1990. I moved out here to write for television. And
awesome.
Then
how
just,
fun.
You know, that became my career. So I was
so
suddenly also, I'm a Californian now. So
New right York, coast, left coast.
What do they
call
it? Cali-Yorkin. I'm a Cali-Yorkin.
So I have never spent any time in New York. I went to New York City once for New Year's Eve. Uh-huh. And that is like the entirety of my New York experience.
I'm sorry about that. That should
Same.
Not be the entirety
yeah.
of your New York experience.
To be honest, I wound up spending New Year's Eve, like the, you know, when the ball dropped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In my hotel room, like every other person in America watching it on TV, because it was too crazy for me.
You know, I had one amazing New Year's Eve, and it was 1979, and I was I don't remember how I met this person, this actor, and you know, I was in the whole theater world in New York, and somehow I ended up at a party, and this guy was renting like an office. It turned into an office loft space, and it was like on 47th and 7th, and you could step out on there. It had like someone else, like part of the roof was like, right, you could walk out, open his window and walk out on the roof. And so it was right above Times Square.
Oh, how cool.
And so
I got
to watch the ball drop from that. And
from
I was
above.
Like, you know what? From above, I was like, that's it. I've had one great New Year's Eve. I'm done.
That is the way to do New Year's Eve in New York.
It was absolutely the way to do it. So, because we weren't inside, we were outside, but you know, so you had that feeling, but you weren't with the, you know, the huddling masses.
Because what I discovered and I didn't know is that people get there at like 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And if you leave, you lose your space.
Oh, absolutely.
So you better not drink or eat anything.
I know.
I don't know.
I've never found it worth it. Cause I'm like always, you know, when I watch it online, I'm going, where's the ball? What's the deal with the ball?
Yeah. And if you're down there, you can't see it anyway.
It's extremely underwhelming.
But it looks, it looks on TV. It looks like it's a fun thing. So there you go. So other than New Year's Eve in Times Square, tell me about New York.
You know, I love my hometown so much because there's absolutely no way you could ever run out of anything to do. And not just spending. I mean, yes, it's expensive, like all cities, but it doesn't have to be. And that's the thing that people don't realize. Like when I was, you know, a poor, starving, you know, playwright, my friend and I lived on the Upper West Side, and a friend and I would pour wine into a jar and we'd go sit on a bench outside on Columbus Avenue where I lived, outside the Museum of Natural History. And we drink wine and chat and people watch.
That's
and it was
so
like
fun.
We created our own little cafe. I mean, you know, nothing is more magical than when spring is suddenly coming and you're walking through Central Park and everything has that bright new green and there's that scent in the air of spring, which I so miss in California because you really, you know, don't get that at all.
We don't get seasons down here either.
No, And then I just remember once I was doing that and then I heard like swing, you know, I heard like Glenn Miller or something. And I looked and under the, you know, there's these beautiful walkways and under one of them near Bethesda Fountain, a boom box. This is back in the 80s, I guess. And we're just dancing.
Oh, how fun.
You know, and there's just so, I mean, I love the history of it. And of course, each borough has its own flavor. I'm a Queens girl. I was born in Queens and my family, that's why my series, my dad was Jewish, my mom was Italian, and so my dad's family kind of migrated to the island from Brooklyn and Long Island. And my
Okay.
mom's family for years stayed in Astoria, the section of Queens, and eventually migrated to New Jersey and the island. But even now I have some of my relatives still live in Astoria, and it's a very it's always been a very kind of middle class, working class neighborhood, although of course with gentrification that's less true.
Right.
But I went there last year because I did a signing at the Astoria Bookshop, and Ditmars and Steinway, those streets just look the same, you
That's
know,
so
they're just
cool.
revolving, and it's very, very diverse. Like now, when I was growing up, it became very Greek. Everyone thinks of it as a Greek neighborhood. But it also now it's like there is a strong Egyptian
Oh,
contingent there.
okay.
And it's just really, I just love it. I mean, I just love New York. I can literally wander. I mean, I go to New York and I will spend, at the end of the day, I have 20,000 steps.
I would
And I
imagine,
always have
yeah.
extra. I have extra money on my Metro card because, I load it up
You walk.
and then I walk.
Yeah.
And I was just, my mom passed away, which was hard because she was such a
I'm
link to the
sorry.
world I write about. You know, in my book, my protagonist Mia runs a catering hall with her father, and it's inspired by the real place where Jared and I got married, which was run by one of our cousins by marriage, my mom's cousins by marriage, and they also ran a place called the Astoria Manor, which was a big, wedding facility
Okay.
in Astoria. So it's very, very personal and real to me, and there's actually a mom connection, which I always assumed and recently had verified, so that
Wow.
people are like, what? That's always, that's such a, it's not a cliche when it's part of your life. So
Yeah.
and actually what's interesting for me, and this has nothing to do with it does have something to do with it growing up and having a New York background, that my dad's father, my Jewish grandfather, disappeared in 1933, and he was a low-level mobster. And from what
Wow.
I've gathered in research, he was up in Massachusetts for some strange reason, and I've realized that was probably to help Meyer Lansky set up a crew of Murder Inc. up there, and that's where he disappeared. And when my grandmother went to look for him, his mobster associates told her she'd be lucky if he wasn't at the bottom of the river, which is where we've come to assume he
He
did end
probably
up.
is. Wow. That is crazy.
But what's interesting, it goes back to the whole New York thing, that there's a book called Tough Jews. And what it does, it's about how in the 20s and 30s, there were actually a contingent of Jewish mobsters who were very involved with the Italian mobsters, which is my family. Well, not all mobsters, Italian Jewish. And I did a little genealogy census, and my grandfather, when he was a kid, there was this candy store in Brownsville, Brooklyn, and it's where they recruited kids to, run numbers or to kind of like
Right.
train and groom for the business. And what I realized looking at the census report, that my grandfather's, where my grandfather grew up, was walking distance to that candy store. So
It
that's
makes
a little bit
sense.
of, yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, everyone thinks of New York as so the present, but its past is to me is just absolutely
Yeah.
fascinating. And I love just walking and you suddenly look up and you see, I was on 6th Avenue in the 30s and I looked across the street and there was this lovely tiny little old building that was really cool, and it was like an I forgot what it was called, but it was like a synagogue for the Jewish fabric garment workers
Oh,
from the
okay.
1920s. So,
How
you know.
cool. Have
But the
you?
then I'm sorry, I was
Yeah.
just gonna say then, but then there's fabulous new stuff like Little Island, which is an island that Diana von Furstenberg and Barry Diller, her husband, basically funded and raised money for. And it's this amazing little island that's built on where the Cunard and White Star lines used to dock. And we know what
Okay.
the White Star line is famous for.
Is that the Titanic?
Yes, the Titanic, of course, it
Yeah.
never did dock. But, so
Yeah.
there's that fabulous element of something new and incredibly interesting and unique.
That's so cool. I would imagine that you could go around New York and eat in a different type of restaurant every single day.
Oh, 1,000%.
And not run out of options. I mean,
1,000%.
Yeah. That's one of the things I, you know, live in a small town in Central Florida, and we have some good restaurants here, but there's not a ton of choices. And, you know, that's, I love all kinds of food. And so I would enjoy that part of New York, I think, immensely.
And it's like a lot of it is just mom and pop. I mean, you don't, you know, just people who have a restaurant and it's a family restaurant. And of course, one thing that's beginning to die out, which makes me sad, is the Greek diners. Because, you know, they're just, I mean, there's nothing like a Greek diner, which has a 1,000-page menu and, you know, and those famous coffee cups and and dates back years to, you know, in a family for years.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to, I mean, and I tend to, I quite often when I'm in New York, I'll just grab a slice, you know, it's like, and I'll walk, I'll eat and I'll eat my slice and a slice
of
pizza.
That's what you do, huh?
Yeah. And you don't say cheese pizza in New York. You say, I'll have a slice of regular.
Oh,
so,
okay. I'll take note of that. I'm hoping that I can get up there someday.
I mean, I'm sure by now, because there's such an influx of tourism that always that, you know, they say, you can say I have a slice of cheese pizza and they know what you're talking about. And maybe people don't.
But they kind of look at you.
Yeah, that tourist.
Exactly. So you grew up in New York and then moved to LA. How did you?
Well, in between, I attended Tulane University, Roll Away in New Orleans. And that is where I developed my other huge passion, which is for New Orleans and for Cajun country.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I was wondering, why am I so attracted to Cajun country? What is it that draws me to it? And what I finally realized is, like, growing up, my mom, when I say she was Italian, I mean, she was born in Italy.
Oh, wow.
She came over when she was three. And
first generation. Wow.
Yes. I'm first gen on her side. And through my childhood, we had relatives coming, you know, a bunch came over before the war, but then, you know, and then they were there for the war. And then into the mid 60s, they kept coming over. So when I went to family functions in Astoria, you know, we'd be in the basement of the two family house that my character lives in the series. And, you know, there'd be this like thin layer of smoke, of course, at the top of the ceiling. And then it would be all like, I wouldn't hear English.
Yeah.
It would be like in it. And what I realized is, I think part of my passion for Cajun culture, because it's a culture within a culture, which is what I grew up with. I mean, when you think about it, first of all, it, you know, the Cajun experience in Le Grand Derangement is what's called when they left Acadia and Canada, and they were driven out by the British. And that precedes the American Revolution. So, you know, since the 1760s, there's been a group of people in this country that have their own language, their own food, their own music, you know, their own. And so it's a culture within a culture. And I think that was
the
connection I had from one region to, you know, the region I,
yeah, it might be different than your culture, but it's the same experience kind of.
Exactly.
So that's really cool. I like that. Yeah. New Orleans is a really interesting area. I like that.
Yeah. And you know, it's such a, it's a very, the people who live there are quite resilient, and it's a very, it's a city that is in danger. It's like America's Venice. And you know, to live there, you need a strength of character and resolve. And I think that's what makes those people so much fun and so interesting. There's a very, you know, New Orleans is a very laissez le bon temps rouler is the, you know, let the good times roll.
Yeah.
And I think that when you're living with the threat of extinction, basically it's you know, you need to do whatever you can to survive.
Yeah.
You know, I happened to be there visiting my daughter who also went to school. She went to Loyola there when Hurricane Ida broke out and was about to come, and we had to evacuate.
Oh, wow.
And then she was out of school for 3 weeks, and I watched as the grid, you know, electrical grid fell into the Mississippi, and, you know, got seriously depressed. And so do people, you know, it's just somehow it bounced back, but, you know, it's still losing population. And, you know, it's, but that's kind of what inspired a lot of Wined and Dined in New Orleans, my second vintage cookbook mystery, which I write as Ellen Byron. Anyway, I got off topic. Sorry.
That's okay. Yeah. So you went to LA. LA and became.
I went to LA.
Became a playwright.
No, I was a playwright in New York, and then I wanted to earn a better living, and I decided to try my luck writing for television. And at the time, you really, the only way you could really do that and have it as a career was to move to Los Angeles, which, of course, as a New Yorker, it's like, what? Live in Los Angeles? Yeah. Drive a car? What? No, no, I can't do that.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to do all that sun. What's
Talk and about I'm not a sun person.
I'm a rain person. I'm a pluviophile. In fact, my husband, I met him at a dinner and his interest was sparked when someone asked, you know, what I miss. And I said, I really miss the rain. And so, you know, it's been kind of a struggle to accept, you know, and of course, as a New Yorker, you know, you're, it's in your DNA to, oh, LA, that, to dismiss LA, which is really too bad because Los Angeles is also a fascinating place. Unfortunately, your ability to explore is limited by traffic.
Right.
But, you know, the natural environment is amazing. You know, I live in a lovely area. I mean, it's really, I've come to really love and accept, you know, where I live. And it's interesting because my new series, The Golden Motel Mysteries, which will launch in July, is set in California.
Oh, fun.
And,
okay.
And my husband and I, it's set in Gold Rush Country. It's in the present. My character is a burned out sitcom writer. Who could that be? Who impulsively buys a mid-century retro motel, kind of rustic motel, that shares a border with a national park. I cheat geography because technically it's like Yosemite and Gold Rush Country, which are actually 2.5 hours apart. But
details, right?
But what is it was inspired by that when I made my first trip to California when I was 19, and my great aunt and uncle, Molly and Howard, had moved from Brooklyn because he was in the food business. And moved to Modesto, California, where he ran a tomato packing plant. And so I visited Molly. And by the way, sorry, I'm getting over a cold, which is why I sound so nasal.
That's okay.
And Molly took me to this place called Columbia State Historic Park, which is in right outside Sonora, California, the heart of Gold Rush Country. And it is an extant miner's village that they've managed to keep intact. And the people dress, you know, when it's in season, people are dressed like pioneers. And, you know, there's a stagecoach that runs.
How cool.
And so when we were, you know, when I was researching, you know, in June, I said, I need to go. I need to go back. I haven't been there since dawn's early time. So Jared and I, we went first to Oakhurst and I did a little narrow gauge railroad that was right outside Yosemite. So I got, you know, it was wonderful. And then we drove what they call, you know, Highway 49, the 49ers, but it's also the Golden Chain Highway, which is literally one of the most scary experiences. You know, it's like driving PCH, but like in, you know, but in like the hills.
Oof.
But what I was struck by is like, it is such, California is such a magnificently beautiful state. And I was thinking to myself, you know, the other place we had just been at Christmas was Cambria, which is on the ocean, on the coast. And I thought, you know, if we drove 3 hours, I don't even know if it was 3 hours, maybe 3 hours west, we'd be at the ocean.
Yeah. It's, you know, California is so diverse.
It's like we were at within like a couple of, you know, you could go from like Yosemite to the ocean.
Mm-hmm. And then if you go south, you've got desert and.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, it's just crazy. Extraordinary.
And then the wine country and mountains in there too.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing they always say, which, you know, sounds like a joke, and the traffic is almost a joke now, but you can ski and surf in the same day. And it's actually absolutely true.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about embracing, you know, my new home state and, you know, but I mean, I will always be a New Yorker. It's funny because when I was there last year, I have a neighbor who lives up the street, and she's actually Canadian, but they've lived there for years and dual citizen now. And her husband is a production designer. You know, so many of us are in the business here.
Oh, of course.
And, and I happened, you know, he was working on a project in New York. So we happened to be there at the same time. And we met for a drink at my favorite bar, which is called the Campbell Apartments. And it's hidden away in Grand Central Station. It's I was right outside, you know, on Vanderbilt. And it's the apartment for in the 20s, it was an apartment for someone who ran. And it's fabulous. It's just like such a New Yorker kind of, you know, like old New York place. It's
definitely a New Yorker
and then
thing.
And then we ran in just completely coincidentally. And this is what like is so amazing about New York is like we ran into each other at MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art, like the next day.
Wow.
I mean, here's my neighbor up the street who I never see in LA. We had a drink.
Yeah.
And then the next day, we ran
into
each other.
Each other in New York. That's
and
so
she
funny.
Texted me after that. She said, I so get you now. You are 100% a New Yorker. You really need belong here. And I'm like, it was both complimentary and insulting at the same time. Because I was like, what do you mean?
Wait a
you didn't
minute.
Get me? You didn't get me before? You had to see me in my original habitat to get me?
That's so funny. So how did you go from play or working in the industry in LA to being an author?
Well,
it's probably not a huge jump, right? Is it?
Well, it's a jump that was necessitated by the fact. So I wrote for, I really had a 25-year career writing TV. I had a writing partner for most of it. And we wrote for sitcoms like Wings and Just Shoot Me and Still Standing and, you know, animated series like Fairly Odd Parents. And then
my parents or my kids watched that one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And what happened? Comedy is very, very ageist. And it's not completely unreasonable, because one thing, you know, now as I've done humor for so many years, is that humor changes. And often what make people laugh in a decade, really, like if you look back at a sitcom from the 70s, it's unrecognizable.
Right.
I mean, in terms of the humor, you know, the laughs we get now. If
Agreed.
You look at early, I've been watching Saturday Night Live literally since the day it premiered. And I never have stopped watching it, even during its worst periods, because it's such a case study of humor. And
interesting. Yeah.
You know, and you look back and it's, you're like, oh, well, what, you know, those older episodes, a lot of them aren't even that funny. And I have to say, what's interesting is that in the last year or two, it's the first time they've had references that I miss, or, you know, because
yeah.
of social media and what goes viral and how quickly it goes viral,
right.
and then how quickly it disappears. So, so that's been an interesting evolution. And so, but to get back to my original point, it leads to ageism, because there's a feeling once you get too old, once you're older, you're not in on the current, you know, comedy
yeah,
trends.
You're not relevant or.
And it's also, it's an exhausting life. I mean, you know, I remember I worked on one show, it was a news show. And that's really can be very, the news shows can be hell. And I remember we worked the entire month of September without a day off. And midnight was an early night. And,
wow.
You know, so it does get wearing. And then if you have kids and a
yeah.
family, yeah, it's very hard.
Makes it challenging, I would think.
So,
yeah.
And then I think also as a woman, as I like to say, as I got older and remained female, work became harder to come by.
Yes.
Because it's, I mean, we came
it's
up,
a
I
thing.
Always, well, I used to, I always say that if I wrote a memoir, which I never will, I would call it, They Have Their Woman, My Life in TV, because we'd say to our agent, oh, we heard the show is looking. And she'd say, oh, they have their woman.
Oh.
Yeah. And, you know, so, and that's gotten somewhat better, but I think it's still, drama is more forgiving in terms of ageism. It used to be not, you know, as sexist as comedy. I think in both arenas in the last like 10 years, they've gotten much more diverse in terms of, all levels. But still, it hit a point where I wasn't working and I needed to do something. I can't not write.
Yeah.
And so I decided, I had tried to write a mystery once before when I found out that a writer we'd worked with on a show backstabbed us and I wanted to kill him. And
writing a book is a good way to do it.
And I periodically, and I liked reading Agatha Christie, that I loved her. I read everything by the time I was 15. I'd read, I think, everything she wrote. And so I took a, well, I used to teach at UCLA Extension and I get a free class and I took a class in mystery writing and I wrote a chapter and it sucked. So I thought, well, I can't really do this. But then when I, in 2010 and 11, when I hit another kind of career drought, I thought I'm going to try again. A friend of mine started a tiny, she got us together, just four of us for a little writer's group. And I wrote a mystery that was inspired, very LA based.
Okay.
It still hasn't been published. I know exactly who the readership is, but it really isn't a cozy and it really isn't a traditional, which is what I realized when the agent I found couldn't sell it.
Right.
But it won a Malice domestic grant, a William F. Deak Malice domestic grant for unpublished writers. And I'd never heard of any of these conventions. I knew nothing about the
yeah.
mystery world. And so I, you know, I, that was my, the jumping off. It took me 9 months, but I found an agent. And while he had it out to sell, I had to do, I was, again, struggling for money, and not even, I wasn't even doing the writing for money. I was just like to keep myself alive creatively. I wrote the first book in what became the Cajun Country Mystery Series, Plantation Shudders. And that did sell, and that really kicked off my writing career. And then in 2014, my partner and I got a job, my writing partner and I got a job at Nickelodeon working on Fairly Odd Parents and then the following show, another show. And that worked out great because the hours were much more for, animation. It's not, you're not in like, I did a lot of multicam. I did do some single camera, but multicam is like every day you're producing a little play that's being shot. And so, you're really, you have a 1 week window to get stuff right. Animation didn't have that. So the hours are much more forforgiving. So I wrote, for 3 years, I wrote a book a year, and then that ended in 2017. And again, there was a, a lull. I did some pilots, and then I finally, took my pension and just decided, this is my third
Time to
act.
move on. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they say Americans don't bat. That was back in the old days. I mean, my first act was probably brief actress, playwright, second act TV. My third act is mysteries, and it's the happiest act of my life. I love
That's
it. I'm so
awesome.
happy.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that because your books are a lot of fun, so.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's funny because it's a way of channeling, the newest book, which is kind of what I should mention, the Maria Jerico. It's the last book in my Catering Hall Mystery series, and I really could just go ball, pardon the expression, balls out. And it's I really feel like I when I finished it, I wrote to my agent. I said, "This is a screenplay masquerading as a book, because it's very visual and it moves like a shot." And in my head, I literally was transcribing scenes I was seeing in my head.
Oh, that's so
So,
cool.
I think a lot of what I learned through my TV career informs what I write and how I write.
Yeah, and your playwright career, I mean,
Yes.
because the
Well, that
inner
really
thought
is.
isn't there on the
Yes.
screen, and so you have to
Exactly.
show it in a
But
different
also
way.
atmosphere. Like you really see my playwriting. In fact, because of my fascination with Cajun country, my first play, Graceland, which is a one act about two women who are both determined to be the first person to set foot inside Graceland the day it opens to the public, one of the characters is a Cajun girl. And I wrote a companion piece, Asleep on the Wind, which is my favorite play I ever wrote. And so you really see the evidence of my playwriting in that series, the Cajun Country Mysteries, because it's very atmospheric. And then I think also in the vintage, because there's a feeling of New Orleans. And in the Golden Motel, I really try to get a little of, I try to get that, of course, because you really, I really love to set a scene and I like to call my book sometimes a vacation with murder. So, people, I want people to really feel they are there.
I love that.
And that comes from the playwriting where you're really trying to create an atmosphere and a setting that's, very seductive and draws people in.
Well, and the fact that you have lived experiences in the places that you're writing about
Yeah.
also helps.
Yes,
So,
absolutely.
yeah, that's cool. So, the Here Comes the Body, the
Yes.
Catering Hall Mystery. How did that series come about?
I thought to myself, when I was thinking of doing another series, I thought there doesn't seem to be a catering, it seems like for a cozy mystery series, a catering hall, a banquet hall, it seems like such a great setting. I mean, it's so perfect because you have rotating events, but you have an established cast, you have, they can all live in the area. And I was like, wait a minute, that was my life. I mean, I grew up with that.
Wait a
Family
minute.
function, and of course, being the Italian families. I mean, these. I wrote a play about one of my cousins' weddings because it was the most out there. There were fireworks. There was an oyster bar. There was a cotton candy machine. At one point, there's the guy got on the MC or whatever. This some band leader got on the phone, the mic and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Caesar salad." They start playing the theme from Rocky, and the entire wait staff comes out juggling pepper mills.
Oh
I
my
mean, so
gosh.
that's, I one of my cousin's weddings, they had, a
Wow.
dance troupe doing a dance to the song Memory from Cats. They had a comedian. They had a blessing from the Pope.
Wow.
So I grew,
That's
I mean, those
so
were the
funny.
weddings. And then there were the communions. And the first, my friend who I took to my one of my cousin's kids' first birthdays at the Knights of Columbus in Astoria. She still taught all my friends who I took to any family events in Astoria, whether they were at a catering hall or my nonna's basement or upstairs on the second floor, while you had a radio going while the TV was on. They to this day, that's like the second thing when we catch up, they talk about after, "Hi, how are you?" "Oh my God, I'll never forget."
That's awesome.
And it's very, very, so I in that series, it's so personal because my protagonist lives literally where my grandmother and my aunt and uncle and their kids lived.
Wow.
Nonna lived downstairs and Zizi Rose and Uncle Henry and the kids lived upstairs. So in my book, not her Nonna, Mia's Nonna lives downstairs and Mia lives upstairs. And the place where she works was the Grand Bay Marina, which is still, it's called something else now. It's something else. But when I was in New York, just, not that long ago, I was there twice. My mom unfortunately passed away this year. And I drove by it. It was like, oh my God, there it is. And of course, it's not exactly like in my book, but the setting, so,
Yeah.
and when Mia, if she leaves the subway, she walks the walk I would walk when I come from the city to go visit Nana.
Love
So
that.
it's the most, it's, and when I write that book, I'm literally seeing my past, my child,
Yeah, your childhood.
not just even my childhood until I moved to, moved to LA even, and going back there. And it's so funny because in my mind, like a lot of my, the look was very 80s because, that was when I spent a lot of time there.
Yeah.
And of course, I went to an event there. Oh, my grandfather on the Italian side helped establish this organization called the Orsogna Mutual Aid Society. And Orsogna is a little town, the hill town, in the Abruzzo region that they all came from. And they all ended up in Astoria. And it's still there. And about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I took my mom. They have once a year the Festa delle Donne, which is the women's festival. And I took my mom. And of course, I hadn't been to like in a function. And, of course, everyone was just very hipply. They didn't look like, they were out of married to the mob. But I just, to keep that theme, that's why I created the character of Cammy, who that she, because I do have the occasional cousin whose look is still, who's got the hair, the big hair, the
Gotta have
big
the big
makeup.
hair, yeah.
They may be dressed in current looks, but the rest of them is all 80s.
That's so funny.
So I made that a
Like
character.
growing up in the 80s, that's yeah.
Yeah,
I can
exactly.
appreciate that.
Exactly.
That's so fun. Very cool. So you said that you've got a new series coming out
Yes,
later this
July
year?
23rd. And
Awesome.
then it launches. It's called A Very Woodsy Murder. It's the first book in the Golden Motel Mysteries. And then on September 3rd, it's like boom, boom, boom. This year was crazy because I had three books come out. That won't happen
Wow.
again. It's too much. I mean, it's an embarrassment of riches. But I have a new publisher for the Vintage Cookbook Mysteries, which are set in New Orleans and which are inspired by my real life hobby of collecting vintage cookbooks, of which I have over 100.
Holy
I
moly.
cannot,
Okay.
and include recipes from my cookbooks that I kind of update
Oh,
in
fun.
these mysteries. And the third one, which is the first with a new publisher, Severn House, launches on September 3rd, and it's called French Quarter Fright Night, and it's set in New Orleans at Halloween.
Oh, fun.
And I had, oh my gosh, I had so New Orleans. I happened to be lucky enough to spend the last couple of recent Halloween's in New Orleans, and they have the crew of Boo. The week before, there's the crew of Boo Parade, and I went to that. And I just, it's so I write,
What a blast.
oh my gosh, it's so fabulous, so much fun. So I got to write all that into the book, and I'm very excited.
That's a fun experience. Yeah.
Oh,
That's
yeah.
I that's the fun thing about being an author is that you can write experiences into your books. You can kill
And
off
then you can,
people that you don't like. You can all
exactly,
of
and
that.
then you get to write it off. That's
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. That's I've killed off a few people, and it's very, very, very fulfilling.
Well, it's a good cathartic thing, you know?
Yes,
It
exactly.
keeps you out of jail.
Truth. Truth.
That's awesome. Well, this has been so much fun talking to you about your
Yes,
life,
same
your books,
here.
all of that. I greatly appreciate your time. This
Oh,
has
well,
been
thank you
so
so
much
much for
fun.
inviting me. I love the book club, and I hope people are inspired to read more of my work. And I really appreciate being included in part of
Yeah,
this.
this has been so much fun.
Yay.
So thank you and have a
Thank
great rest of
you.
your day.
You too.
Thanks for joining me today. If you'd like to be part of the Read Across the US Book Club, I'd love to have you join us. There is a link in the show notes. So just head down there and click, and we will welcome you in. So see you in the book club, I hope. Have a great day, and we'll see you next week with a new episode.